When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
This is a More Than Just Podcast production.
Hey everybody, welcome to episode 351 of the More Than Just Code podcast. My name is Tim Mitchell and I am in Toronto, Ontario. I'm joined once again by Jaime Lopez Jr. in Seattle, Washington.
How's it going?
We have Mark Rubin online in San Jose, California. Alrighty. So it's been a while. It's been a minute, as it were. I don't recall any mistakes we made in the last show, so we have no fact check. Imagine that.
We're getting better at this.
We're getting better at this, yes. We should take longer breaks between shows. And I guess, you know, the well is dry. We have no Ask MTJC, I assume, either.
I didn't see any when I looked.
All right, cool. All righty, well, so a little bit of follow-up from our last episode. We were discussing the iPhone 14 had just been announced. We've now, I believe, some of us have them. I don't know about you guys. Do you guys have your iPhone 14 Pros or Pro anything yet?
I don't yet, no.
You, Jaime?
I do not, and I think I have bailed out and decided not to. It's not a hard decision. Yeah. You know, don't hold me to it. Next episode, I may be like, oh, look, I sure love my 14 Pro. It's so great. I may change my mind yet again. But as of right now, I think I'm going to hold off for one more year.
Well, at the rate it's going, you got a couple of months to decide between our next episode and this one, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I do have the iPhone 14 Pro. I decided to jump in. I think once I figured out, and I think it was on the show that I figured it out last time, because I think we were recording a couple of days before they went on sale. I did buy one, and I bought the Pro, and I bought it with the PayBright pay-as-you-go plan with no interest from set up by Apple, but organized through PayBright here in Canada. So I am enjoying a iPad Pro 14 256 with Jaime's favorite deep purple color and Apple Care for around $75 Canadian, rough give or take, a few tax dollars here and there. So yeah,
it's and that lasts for
like
2 years.
Camera.
That's over 2 years.
I think so, yes. Yeah. And then, I mean, I was paying about the same for an iPhone 12 Pro from Rogers. There was an interest charge on top of that, like a financing charge, right? So once I pay off the Rogers one, which should be soon, I'll be free and clear from them, and I can finally be able to, you know, take my business elsewhere. But and this will be the first time second phone I bought outright since buying iPhones, actually. Yeah, so anyway, so my follow-up is that we were discussing iPhone 14 screen sizes, and I have a couple of articles here that I picked up along the way. The first one was we were trying to, because that other document we were referring to from Paint Code it stopped at the iPhone 11, right? So, and the 12 and the 13 are very close to, 13, I can't remember if the 13 is bigger, but the 14 here is listed at 6.1 inches diagonally for the 14, and the Pro is also 6.1, and the max sizes are 6.7. The difference is the amount of space at the top of the screen for the either notch or, I don't know what we're calling, what is it called, dynamic island?
I think so. which is a mouthful. Yeah.
So in this first article, there's a bit of specs about it, but he has a nice diagram explaining the amount of space in the safe area, and you know, a nice little graphic here with the green and yellow showing the safe area and the amount of space left over for the status bar at the top. And same thing with the iPhone Plus. And then, of course, on the with the dynamic island, surprisingly, it's actually larger amount of space for the status bar area. It's 54 points versus, 47 points. Yeah, so it's a few points taller in terms of the amount of space. For some reason, the instrument panel, instrument cluster is smaller, but you'll have to have more space, I guess. That's for the dynamicness or whatever. That's why they keep the palm trees on the island. But so first article here.
Actually, it looks like the 14 and the 14 Plus are the 47 points, but the Pro and the Pro Max are 59
points.
Yeah,
Pro or 54. Oh, did I say that wrong?
Yeah, you were saying the 13. I thought you were saying the 13 was 47 points.
Sorry, no. Yeah, I may have said that wrong. But yeah, no, I meant the 14, the plain old 14 with the old chip.
Yeah.
Basically has 47 points of protected area, and then the Pro models have 59 points in total. So this
is interesting. This is the first time, I think, within a generation that they've had a different size, not safe area between different devices. Yeah. It's going to cause some issues.
So they have them listed here in terms of like the complete sizes of phones in terms of pixels or points, I guess. You know, like the large phones are 430 by 932 at 3x resolution, I guess. And then the 6.1, all the way down to the 4-inch one is, I think, the current iPhone. Is there an iPhone 4? iPhone SE, is that still on the market? I guess it's still supported, right?
I think it's still supported, yes.
Yeah, so that's 320 by 568, which is the old, you know, I guess the iPhone 5 size, right?
iPhone 5, that's where it started, yeah.
Yeah,
that was and the then, long one.
So the second article that follows up on, that was from userloaf.com. The second article I have here is an interesting one. It's an article by Jeff Haxworth, and he does a bit more examination. He talks about how Apple, even in spite of the fact that the phones have different sizes of safe area, that Apple's UI system adjusts automatically to the size of the screen, which is, we kind of hypothesized on that a few times on this show. But he's written an app, I think you can download it off of GitHub, called Adaptability, I believe. And it draws lines on the screen to show you where things, like measurements and lines, almost like a drafting diagram, which shows you the amount of spaces, whether your phone's in portrait mode or landscape mode, and shows you things like toolbars and stuff like that. I haven't really played with it, but in this article, he talks about how Apple's able to dynamically adjust the size of the screen for the device, right? So I guess we don't have to worry about layouts and stuff like that. Like, you remember the headaches we used to have to go through between iPad and iPhone when they first came out, right? Different sizes.
Need more size glasses.
Well, we don't, apparently, according to this article.
But
what's interesting, though, is that he talks about there was one thing I was reading here that he said that, I think it was on the simulator, it scales it down to like iPhone 13 size, even though the 14, as we discussed, has more safe area. Yeah, he says that it kind of zooms it up or whatever. And he also has, you know, how you have, I don't know if you remember, when you set your phone up, you have the standard zoom and the zoomed version. He also has a way, the app is able to show you the difference in layout. And he's got these all screenshots in this article, so you don't have to download the app. You can actually just go through here and read it. So it's kind of cool tool to be able to have, or to be able to look at the different sizes. And, you know, obviously, if you're doing anything design-wise or layout, you know, it behooves you to look at this.
Yeah. I mean, for a very long time, you should be using things like safe area, but every once in a while, you've got something that, you know, isn't going to fit the standards, and you got to sort of deal with the design a little differently. So it's good to actually know these things and be aware if you're looking to style a little differently than the base stuff. It shouldn't be your default to go wild. The pixel perfect days of, you know, every iPhone is the same size has not been true for a long time. But I think it's too far to say, well, only use the standard stuff 100% of the time. That's not practical, I think.
Yeah, and what's interesting in the article, in the conclusion here, he talks about that some people had noticed this difference I was talking about between the simulator layout and test flight, where a person had noticed that there was a difference in the layout on a 14 and a 14 Pro when you're coming through, like between what you see in simulator, and it's a slight size difference. So again, it goes back to my old, you know, I want to see it on a device kind of proofing, you know, to make sure my layouts are behaving properly.
It is a simulator. It doesn't always do things perfectly. I do remember seeing some weird text layout things that it looks great in a simulator. Oh my gosh, it looks terrible in a real device. I wonder what's happening there. That can still happen. So it's always good to see it, you know, for reals, even if you're doing it from like automated testing or something that takes screenshots, and then you can, you know, eat your sandwich while you see all the screenshots that it made for you.
Yeah, and just as a bit of a follow-up here, I'm not going to talk about it right now, but if you're curious about this same sort of thing on iPads, Jeff has also written an article called View Controller Presentation Changes in iOS and iPad OS 16. So when you click on that one, he does the same exploration on iPad layouts. So if you're curious about that, I highly recommend that. I'll have a link in the show notes for that one as well. But that's cool. Anyway, so the reason why we convened here today is to talk about a few things, but obviously there was an event, there was a non-event yesterday, I guess we can call it, right? Where Apple rolled out some new equipment. But before we get into that, we've got a couple of sort of follow-up articles that first we consider main topic, not so much because we haven't really talked about them on the show before, but, or have we? The first one was, I think we were discussing last time I raised the question of like, why do we care about USB-C versus Lightning ports? You know, when we're all moving towards MagSafe and key chargers and that kind of stuff. And the future seems to be wireless, you know, we have wireless, debugging on with Xcode as well. And, but since that time, I think what, a week ago, I think, the European Union sort of put their foot down and said, European Union said Apple has to move away from Lightning ports and they want USB-C standard on all devices going forward. And you guys are familiar with that story, right?
Yeah. I'm not familiar with the European law and the way these things always get presented is like, you know, unclear to me as an outsider as to whether this is actually definitive. You've really, all the signatures have been gathered sort of effective law, or if it's sort of on its way through the different houses, parliaments, courts, etc., that need to dot all the I's and cross all the T's. This often happens even within the U.S. Like, the Senate passed this thing. Like, that's cool. Has it been signed by the other part? Has the president looked at it? Great. You know, like, it's good to give me a heads up, but you really should tell people, like, is this actually happening? Has it happened or not? So let's assume that it is an inevitability for the European law, just to simplified, and you can use hashtag ask MTJC if we completely blew it and, you know, didn't understand. But let's just assume, basic general idea, government somewhere has decided that, like, literally all chargers shall use this standard, and it's called USB-C. It simplifies.
So this. I look at it this way, like it's like the Monty Python and the Holy Grail, where, you know, the European Union is King Arthur and you guys are Dennis, you know, on in the fields, and, you know, but I'm your king. And Dennis looks at him and says, I didn't vote for you, right? So it's interesting, like that, you know, isn't it cute that the European Union thinks they can push Apple around, right? Is my take on that, right?
Well, I mean, it's a pretty good chunk of business.
It's a big market. Yeah. It'd be hard for one country to do it. But for a consortium of them, a cabal of them to do it. I mean, that's why you create something like that, right? To punch above your weight class as a collective whole, to form a union of sorts, if I want to put it that way. But nevertheless,
like a European Union, you mean? Yeah.
I mean, we digressed a little bit here, but let's assume that this law going to, and it's not unique to Europe. I think Brazil might be doing something similar. Either Japan and or Korea or South Korea are doing something similar. So there's like a large sort of, hey, everybody should just use this one standard kind of thing. People are like, you know, they're tired of carrying around dongles and different chargers. They just want everything to use just the one plug.
Well, I mean, by the same token, so we have MagSafe now in most of our phones, right? And I believe the latest iPhone or Apple Watch 8 will also charge on a key charger, and so will the AirPods case, if I'm not mistaken, right? So this article written by Mark Gurman, October 9th, basically says, like, you know, what's the big deal? I mean, and it hopefully for Mark, this is great news because it'll bring air power to the back onto the market, right? Because if everything goes wireless or everything goes to wireless charging, you know, off we go to the races, right? I don't know, like you guys, have you, you haven't bought any new phones recently, but I've gone through a couple of phone setups and iPad setups over the last couple of years. I haven't had to plug the phone in other than charge it. I haven't had to plug a phone in to do any data transfer or anything like that. It's all been done, you know, over the air or by sitting two iPhones next to each other and just magically, you know, punching in the credentials and having it transfer over, and then the rest of it downloads from iCloud, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So, I mean, we don't really need cables per se, you know. That said, I still use cables when I'm building for Xcode, but that's another point.
Wireless debugging, yeah. Though. Like, you don't have to use cables with Xcode.
Not a hard requirement. For the iPad, you do. You still need cables for the iPad.
Oh, really? I thought that one had it, too.
I find it buggy.
No, there aren't any iPads that have MagSafe, are there, that have wireless charging?
No. Oh, well, not per se. They have the... Oh, and now you make me... It's like a... There's a smart connector on the back of the iPad. Like, I have my Magic Keyboard plugs into... I just leave it plugged in.
Right.
With a USB-C charge.
Right.
And then my iPad has like connectors on the back, and it just magically charges. And same thing with the current Apple Pencil 2. We'll talk about charging the Apple Pencil 1 in a few minutes, hopefully. But the Pencil 2 just charges as well through magnetic induction, right? So
yes, the Pencil does. But the iPad, when it's plugged into the Folio, does it? Or does it have to plug in?
Yeah, do you have a Magic Keyboard? Or
I do. Yeah, I guess it does, doesn't it? That's interesting. I guess it does. Okay.
Well, it's held in place by mag. It's got like it's almost like a MagSafe. It's kind of connected right. on the
But does it charge? Back, right? Actually, I would pretty much always keep it plugged in.
Oh, no. If you plug your USB-C cable into your Magic Keyboard, right?
Yeah.
And then just plunk your iPad onto the Magic Keyboard, it will charge.
Okay.
So you don't have to ever use that USB. I very rarely use the USB-C port on the side of my iPad, you know?
Okay.
Yeah. So yeah, unless I'm like going rogue and I'm just not taking the keyboard with me, which I do from time to time. But yeah, I mean, like the future is like looking bright. I mean, that's what this article is basically saying, is that like, you know, we're moving towards wireless. And again, I don't really think it's that big a deal for Apple to put a USB-C device or charging cable thing into a future phone, right?
So which side are you asking from? Because the snarky comment is like, if it was so easy, how come Apple hasn't done it? You know, just get out your CAD and copy and paste the USB, you know, select and delete the Lightning one. Do you mean from a more of like a what it does to the market kind of move, what it signals to switch away from Lightning?
Yeah, I don't know. Do we have, I guess we have nobody on Android here. Like I was thinking this morning, like, does Android not have key charging devices? They must, right? Wireless devices.
Yeah, I'm sure they do.
Samsung phones have some sort of high speed wireless charging. Pretty sure the new Pixel phones have it as well. So it's I can't speak to how common it is, but it's certainly not unusual to have. So there's, you know, vaguely.
I think they also have the ability to charge. They have the ability to charge from one phone to the other as well, right?
Samsung is the only one I can think of off the top of my head that I've personally seen. Well, not personally seen the devices do it, but seen the actual commercials touting that such a feature. But, you know, when you have that sort of thing in one device manufacturer, it's certainly plausible that other ones will have it too. I'm just not super up to date with the latest and greatest and what's going on in Android.
Yeah, I mean, I won't complain when my iPhone is using a USB-C cable, because, I mean, just about everything I have is USB-C now. Like, I have, you know, two Macs and I got this iPad here that are already using USB-C, right? And I bought a nice little charger for traveling, which has two USB-C ports and is strong enough to charge a Mac and an iPad at the same time, right? So I won't miss the Lightning cable, but, you know, I don't see what the fuss is, to be honest with you, but, you know, other than that. I think, in the future, like, we're moving towards wireless everything, right? Data transfer. I mean, other than physical speed you get from using a physical cable, right?
That is the one thing that gives me a little bit of pause, that most of the time, maybe 99 times out of 100, I would be perfectly fine with wireless charging and the decent speed that it does. even for some of those, you know, get you from, you know, close to nothing up to 50, 75, 80% within some very short period of time. And then there's that one time where you're like, oh no, I desperately need this thing to charge like now. It needs to be fully charged within an hour. Otherwise, I got to do some sort of backup plan, like carry some batteries with me so I can recharge. Pick your poison, travel, camping. There's like other edge cases. And I think it's fair to call them edge cases. I don't know that there are occasions where I would day-to-day normally require wired charging. I just need good user experience to make sure that I didn't accidentally bump the thing slightly off the wireless charger, and now it has silently not been charging, which is much more difficult to have in when you have a physical cable that like snugly hangs on to the device.
Yeah. Well, as I think, as I'm looking at these pictures, I'm thinking, okay, so my trackpad has to plug in through a lightning cable to charge, and I don't have any of these new mice that has the USB, or sorry, lightning,
yeah,
lightning
the, cable. The Bluetooth charge. Keyboards also, you have to charge them with the lightning.
With lightning?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So that would be, those are devices would be awkward once we get rid of, you know, lightning cable per se, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's always tough to do that sort of transition, but I think it's ultimately a good thing for having a standard. I mean, there's a reason internet browsers have standardized in what they do. You don't fire up, you know, Brave or Firefox or Chrome and Safari or Edge and be like, oh no, I'm so shocked that this website was made for Netscape and now it doesn't work on my browser. Well, because we've pretty much standardized on that, right? We're differentiating on other things. And I do think Lightning has, even today, continues to be superior in some ways over USB-C. Is it enough to really warrant having this outlier cable versus just standardizing on the cable, or at least the input part, and largely sort of leaving it in the dust when we've got wireless stuff going on? I'm okay.
And it's not like not the first time we had the 32-pin connector on the iPods and the iPads and iPhones for the longest time. And we don't miss those, right?
We sure did at the time, though. We could go into the Wayback Machine and remember people getting so angry that the latest Apple devices switched the pin connector to Lightning.
Yeah, and they were mad when they took away the floppy drive, too, you know.
I have a USB floppy drive in my drawer if you need to borrow it.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. All right. Well, so speaking of only available in the United States, what's going on with Apple Card, Jaime?
This is a weird one. This is just a press release that went out, and I've got a few links here to people talking about it in general. So Apple put out a press release on October 13th, 2022, saying that Apple Card, and I'm reading from it right now, Apple Card will soon let users grow daily cash rewards while saving for the future. Apple Card users will be able to grow their rewards in Apple Wallet by automatically depositing their daily cash into a new high-yield savings account from Goldman Sachs. There's not much in here. There's a lot of bluster about Apple Card, and you can use it at Pandora Bread and T-Mobile and Ace Hardware and et cetera. Some nice UI designs that kind of look like what you would expect if you were to mock it up. It's really more about the kind of interesting next logical step that Apple seems to be taking here towards, you know, to be really clear, they're absolutely 100% not a bank. They could not present themselves as that, right? Goldman Sachs, in this case, is the chartered bank.
Right.
But in this increasingly fintech, financial technology blended world, it gets a little fuzzier. Do you really care whether Apple itself is the bank? Not really. You like the wonderful UI that it has right there in Apple Wallet. I think that's kind of an interesting play, kind of a logical one, given that they've added the Apple Buy Now, Pay Later to Apple Pay and et cetera. So they're really growing that whole sort of financial life that you have.
I don't know. I think this is all a bunch of nothing. I think it's just nothing more than the fact that interest rates are much higher than they were 6 months ago. 6 months ago, Treasury bonds were giving you 0.1% interest. Now they give you about 3% interest. So anywhere where you have just a little bit of money sitting around, that's capable of earning, you know, risk-free, roughly 3%. Interest. So any money that you have sitting in an account at at Goldman Sachs for backing your Apple Card is just money that's sitting there that Goldman Sachs is backing with treasury bonds, probably. So they're taking a little bit of cut and giving you 2% or something like that. This is nothing. It's just like when you have a brokerage account. If you have money in your brokerage account that isn't invested, it sits in this kind of backing account. Mm-hmm. And if you've noticed, those rates that you're getting, your interest rates on those that you were getting 0.1% on 6 months ago, you're now getting roughly 2 to 3% on. So it's the same deal. It's just there's money sitting around. Because interest rates are high, that money has to earn interest, or you're going to take it out and move it somewhere else, right? Simple as that. So I think this is nothing. I think this is just, this was happening anyway. So Apple released put out a press release and look how great this is now, but it's nothing.
Yeah.
It's nothing. There's nothing to this. Your savings account at your bank went from 0.1% to 3% too.
Did it? Oh, yes. Okay.
Yes. Yes.
Well, so let's split a few things there. So I think it's not going to be huge in making waves in terms of an APY. Annual percentage yield standpoint. And yep. Looking at Investopedia, the highest one I see is Fitness Bank at 3.5. And the second to third place are a bunch of 3.11s, 3.10s, 3.05, 3.01. So to your point, that like everybody's joining in the fun from this. This isn't like, right. You know, some crazy 10% or 20% or something.
Right. These are savings accounts. So, but if you look at 3 month short-term treasury bonds, so you buy a 3 month bond, you get 3.9% annualized income. So all these banks can offer these high interest rates because they take your money. I mean, they don't actually do this, but in effect, what they're doing is they're taking your money that you've put in. They're buying treasury bonds at 4% and they're paying you 3.5% interest and they're keeping the other 0.5%. So
the treasury bond is covered by the government, like the treasury?
Yeah. The Fed.
Okay.
So there's the full, there's some phrase, full faith and something of the U.S. government behind it. The U.S. government is basically saying this will not default. So it's the most risk-free investment in the world that you can possibly get. So you buy stock, you know, there's risk. It could go down. It could go up. It could go down. You buy real estate. It could go up. It could go down. But a treasury bond will never go down. If you buy a treasury bond for a certain term, could be 3 months, could be 30 years. At the end of that term, you get paid the amount that they said they would pay you at the beginning. So it's completely risk free. Now, of course, inflation going up makes the actual dollar value not as good as it seemed, right? But so if you're getting 4% interest on a treasury bond and inflation is 8% like it is now, then you're still kind of losing money long term. But that's a whole different arc. That's a whole different discussion. Yeah, all this is you know, all the banks are doing this anyway. This is nothing at all to do with Apple. And they're just, you know, they put out a press release. Why not?
I mean, they still had to build the feature though, right? So you're right. From like a user standpoint, it kind of becomes a nice thing where I'm looking at my Apple Cash and it'd be kind of nice if that was earning. They've still not revealed the percentage, right? If it was more than the practically zero than it is now and adding that fuller financial life. I'm like, okay, I see what they're doing there. For me, this is kind of more interesting in that like Apple is starting to become Starbucks. Well, there's a title for you, right? So Starbucks is weirdly a bank that sells coffee, right? So all of those cards that you have, those gift cards that your manager might have given you, like, hey, good job on that project. Here's $10, right? It's all in there, and it's this weird sort of economy that they've kept in there, where if you know you buy something, if you send somebody value, it's really just this internal database change for money that stays within Starbucks's ledger and its accounts. And only when you actually try to convert it into something like, you know, fiat dollars, I'm like, oh, like this gift card, I didn't buy the full $10. I sure would like to cash this out in some sort of way, or I'd like to get the change on whatever. Only when they hit actual payment rails did they start paying actual interchange and a whole bunch of other things that at scale are a big deal. So for Starbucks, there's something like a $1 billion asset, which makes them a pretty nice, not really a community right. bank. They're like a regional bank, not a huge one, but a pretty sizable regional bank. And Apple is much bigger. So having hypothetically a bunch of these things where I am paying for stuff with my Apple savings account and pulling money, all it is changing, you know, ledger values and not actually going over payment rails, probably ends up with some significant savings, no pun intended, for Apple itself when it comes to dealing with payments. So I think that's the bigger play. You incidentally getting, X percent, you incidentally doing things with it, probably not that interesting to them, other than I really hope they buy this iPhone with this savings account money and not with this credit card. Even Apple
Card. I would say Apple is not becoming Starbucks. Apple is moving away from what Starbucks. Apple was doing exactly the same as Starbucks because Starbucks doesn't pay you interest on that money that you have on your card. But now you will be making interest on the money. Maybe Starbucks will do it too, I suppose. It's really an incentive for keeping it in the system, or rather from you taking it out of the system is what they're worried about. Because if you have $1,000 built up in your Apple Cash, let's say, if you aren't getting the 3% interest, well, the correct thing for you to do is to take that money out, put it in a bank, and get that 3% interest, and then buy your Apple stuff later. But Apple doesn't want you to do that, right? They don't want you to take the money out. Or really, it's not Apple; it's Goldman Sachs. Don't ever forget, it's not Apple. This is Goldman Sachs. Apple just put their wrapper on it. They don't want you to take that out because then they lose their capitalization, right? All this money that Goldman Sachs has in all these accounts, they're using either to lend out to other people or to buy things like treasury bonds, and they're making money off of that. So if you take that money out, then they're losing that capital. So they might as well give you something to keep you from taking that out. And it will always be less than you can go out and buy treasury bonds for, of course, because they have to make money. But Starbucks hasn't done that. It'll be interesting to see if they do.
Yeah, it's not a perfect analogy.
Yeah, yeah. I imagine there's more churn. Well, I don't know if there's more churn on Starbucks because people are constantly, the reason you put the money in is to buy stuff with Starbucks, as opposed, whereas with Apple, it's you're buying stuff and you're getting cash back. It's kind of a different model.
It is the equivalent of, it's not that different, but it is kind of the equivalent of the, people on the space station having to recycle their pee into drinkable water. It doesn't introduce new water, but it slows down the loss of water, right? Where you're right, they're giving you some money on there and you're like, oh, I guess I have enough to buy, these Smurf berries or this new iPhone or whatever, and yeah. It just kind of brings it in and more. So they do lose a little bit, but their margins are so fantastic for their product that it is kind of an interesting play to do that. And I think keeping things in the network is certainly pretty valuable. If only anecdotally, I have noticed that Square's Cash App suddenly appears at a whole bunch of different, in my case, predominantly coffee shops that I've gone to, where suddenly they're beyond just the contactless payments, Apple Pay, Google Pay. There is a big old, I think it's green logo that says pay with Cash App, which is new to me. That's a non-trivial thing to do that sort of big push and get the system set up and everything. So it implies to me
that's
that
the Square Cash App,
Square's Cash App. Yeah, it implies to me that Square is trying to be like, hey, why don't you just keep all of this payment stuff? The money that Jaime sends Tim and Mark, they can use it at their local coffee shops. And guess what? As long as they keep shuffling the same money back and forth. We as Square never actually pay any of the interchange to move it out because it's just on our ledger. All right. So it's an interesting sort of play for people to do. So I think this is, some combination of what we've discussed here on this panel is probably what Apple's actually doing here. They're not trying to become your bank per se, even though I did make the statement that Starbucks is a bank that sells coffee. It's more of a pithy statement to shock the mind.
Well, for those of you who skipped that section and have now joined us here in the the main part of the show. We're here to talk about the event that was not an event. So there was yesterday, as we anticipated there'd be some sort of iPad event, as there usually is, or some kind of announcement. But there were three products that got released, or main products. There were some accessories that came along with them. But so the first thing that came out yesterday was the Apple TV 4K. I'm going to call it third generation because that's what it is. Yeah, so Apple TV third generation, Apple TV 4K third generation, or the third generation of the 4K, but it's actually the seventh generation of the Apple TV since the very first one back in the Steve Jobs day. So this one came out yesterday in an announcement. It's using the A15 Bionic chip, which is kind of an interesting move. The last, the fourth generation was using an A12. So it's been, I guess, a couple of years since we've had an Apple TV 4K come out. This one supports HDR 10 plus, which I don't know what that is. Comes in a couple of flavors. The high dynamic range, but I don't know what the 10 stands for.
It's 1 year better than the 9.
Yeah. Okay.
Whatever that is.
it's a plus though, two marks.
That's true. Okay. So it's an S year. Yeah.
Yeah. It's an S year. And so it comes in two flavors or two sizes, a 64 gig with Wi-Fi only at $129 US. Interesting, when I thought about this, I thought for a second that the 128 version comes with, for 149, comes with 128 gigabytes plus Wi-Fi and gigabit Ethernet. And I thought to myself, that's weird. I don't ever remember an Apple TV not coming with Ethernet. But anyway, so what sounded like new is actually something that's been on the Apple TVs for a while, the Ethernet port, that is. But this one has some sort of threaded network support, which kicks it up even another notch, right? So... but they're talking about this one having a cinematic experience, more old Dolby Atmos and things like that as well. So I think in concert with the no longer existing HomePods, you're going to have a great cinematic experience with your television, right? So I don't know if you guys have anything to say about the Apple TV, or you even use one. What generation you guys have?
I haven't used my Apple TV in a long time. Ever since the Apple TV app got built into my cable box. I guess that's it. You know, I'm sort of old school in that I still use a cable box instead of streaming everything. But yeah, so the Apple TV app is now built into the cable box.
Is it your Comcast cable box?
Yeah, Xfinity. Yeah, Comcast. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Huh.
So it's just, you know, it's a couple of extra clicks to turn on the Apple TV. I never do it.
How about you, Jaime? Are you using an Apple TV?
I'm not. I am using a Roku. I forget which model. They come out with ones every once in a while, and when mine got too old, I got whatever was not quite the latest and greatest. It was like in the same class, but one tier lower. And it works perfectly fine. It's got Apple AirPlay 2 support and stuff. This isn't attractive to me at the moment, but, you know, my Roku fell into the river, and I'm like, oh, maybe I should get this one. And, right? Does a lot of stuff. The pricing is probably the best part, in that this is a lot closer to the pricing of competitive boxes from Amazon and Roku and etc. Whereas before, I think we'd said before, like, what's this Apple TV doing? It's like, it might as well be $3,000. It's so far away from the, you know, $50 to $100 price range that everybody else was going with. So $129, $149, it's close. You know, you always add the little Apple premium. So I think this is a good price for what, you know, is going to be a good quality product that isn't going to, you know, fade away tomorrow kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, it's really like a dumb iPhone, really. I mean, the one thing advantage I have is I have the two old school, the old OG HomePods, and I have them paired as stereo speakers. And so my Apple TV plays through those. Right. I hadn't really clicked in. I know that Apple TV Plus was in some Samsung TVs, but I didn't know they were in cable boxes yet. So, mm-hmm.
Yeah, that one's news to me, because I was aware that they'd moved onto other devices and had they essentially opened things up a whole lot more. It wasn't, you know, ever since they added Apple TV Plus, it's not just locked into Apple devices. But that was actually news to me, Mark, that I didn't realize that cable boxes actually had this now.
It's been that way for some time. Probably at least a year.
No, it's a smart move from Apple's point of view. I mean, that's how they got iTunes onto Windows, right? That was what made the iPhone possible, right? That's a good idea. Mm-hmm. So, Hami, how are you consuming Apple TV Plus stuff by airplane to your Roku box?
I am currently not an Apple TV Plus subscriber, but when I was the freebie moocher with the year long subscription they gave us for free with whatever it was I bought, I was using it on the Roku, and it was a little janky. But honestly, if you really are only interacting with it, you know, once, and then you're just binging 5 hours worth of content, like, what does it matter if it's not that great of a UI on the Roku? I'm sure it's better on the actual Apple TV itself. I would expect Apple TV Plus to be at its best on its own device. But, you know, queuing up videos is queuing up videos. It's not really that hard of a problem from a UI standpoint, right? It's really hard for somebody to completely fail at that task.
Well, yeah, I was going to say the one drawback of this one. So as you know, the Apple remote, TV remote, got replaced last year with one with a little click wheel on it, which is still just as janky as, like, my dog rolls over on the couch and mutes my TV, or, you know, like, it's too easy to change things and click the wrong icon and stuff like that. Yeah, so that better remote, I'm doing air quotes on around the better, is still coming with this version of the Apple TV 4K. So
sounds like you need an OtterBox for your remote, Tim, for your use case, because you have a sizable dog. So it would be asking a lot for him to be able to roll over a remote without triggering something.
Yeah, sometimes I touch the remote, and like, I'm watching. The thing about it is I have my Rogers cable box, and I'm watching cable TV or something like that. Like, I'm watching a sporting event, which I do rarely, and I'll accidentally touch the Apple TV remote, which will wake the Apple TV up, which takes over my HDMI port, switches the TV display to the Apple TV, which is kind of annoying. But
yeah, that happens.
Sometimes I just give up and watch cable TV on the Apple TV as well.
Oh, how do you watch cable on the Apple TV?
Oh, I have Bell Fi, but I'm with Bell, so I get all of the Rogers and Bell are both moved to, like, internet TV, even though they have a set-top box. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the set-top box is just a PVR with a, believe it or not, mechanical hard drive that still records your shows.
Yeah.
Actually, I believe it's mechanical. But, I mean, that's the only reason. I mean, but the reality is like, I'm moving more and more away from even watching, I mean, PVR a few shows, but I mostly watch things through Apple TV. And if I miss a show, I can go over to the Bell app, or I can go to, like, the channel app, like, FX has an app, and all the other, you know, various networks I watch have an app, and I can just go and catch up on a couple of episodes if I missed PVRing them, right? Which happened this year because I was traveling in April, right? Or August, I guess. Mm-hmm. But yeah. Anyway, so yeah, I've already got two 4K TVs, and there's one at my mom's house that she doesn't even use, so I'm not in the market to buy one of these right now. And I don't know that I get the difference here, right? So. Other than the fact it's got this new A15 chip, right? That's the only thing I can really sort of see that makes it stand out. And that said, let's move on to the other thing that was the non-announcement was, as Jaime's got here, it was actually a video that came out on YouTube. It was a press release, obviously, and then, you know, people were talking about it. But there's a really nice video where, instead of having a sort of a keynote presentation, they had a couple of people introduce one young lady introduced the iPad, which is the 10th generation iPad, and although I think it's like the 17th model or something like that, and then the iPad Pro. But so we'll dive into the iPad first, and comes in four colors: pink, blue, yellow, and silver. Has a 10.9 liquid retina display. They've moved the Touch ID button to the top button instead of the side, I think is where it is now. And this has A14 Bionic chip, which is the same chip in the iPhone 14, I believe, right? And it's basically, it's an incremental increase from previous iPads, right? And 20% CPU boost, they say. The back camera is 12 megapixel. I don't know, can't remember if that was an upgrade from the previous iPad. This one will shoot up 4K video, they're saying. I think that's new. And the front camera, which is interesting, that they've moved the front camera to the long side of the box, Mark, so that if you're looking at your iPad in landscape mode, the camera's at the top where it should be, right?
This is a game changer. This is the most important feature of this whole new device.
Yeah. No, I 100% agree. Yeah. Like, I can't tell you the number of times I'm sitting in a meeting and if I just happen to join like a Zoom call on my iPad, it looks like you're looking off into space because you're not really, even though it was supposed to magically adjust your face angle or whatever back in the day. But it has Wi-Fi 6. I haven't kept up with my Wi-Fi standards. I didn't know there was a 6. It also, if you have a cellular model, it comes with 5G. And the cool thing that they've introduced here is they've got this new Magic Keyboard Folio, right? You know, I don't know about you guys, when you're traveling around and you're seeing people at a coffee shop with a laptop device and they've got this little kickstand case. I look at that and I immediately know that's a Microsoft Surface. So now you have to do a double take now to look for the Surface logo or for the Apple logo, because this guy it's a two part case. The back panel has a little kickstand so you can have it in the vertical mode, and the keyboard, instead of connecting to the back like the one that Mark and I have now, the Magic Keyboard, it connects to the bottom like it does on a Surface, right? Kind of interesting. Full size keys. It has a row of function keys, which I miss on my iPad currently. Like, I think that's the one thing missing for the Magic Keyboard. Is that what we're calling it? Magic Keyboard? I forget what they call these things now. And so that's kind of a new thing. Of course, comes with the new, I guess this is just announced, the iPad OS 16 is officially coming on these devices too, which is something we've been waiting for since WWDC, right? Comes in two flavors, 64 gig and 256 plus, you know, the cellular kick up from there. So $449 starting at for the US model. I didn't get the 256 price for the US, but in Canada, that's going to be $599 and $799. So I guess it's probably $200 difference in the US too, or something like that, right? You guys have the price in hand?
Don't have in front of me.
Check the store.
No. Okay, we can look at it. So what do you guys think about this? I mean, like Mark, the game changer on the...
Yeah. Is this the first time the iPad has come in different colors?
No, I mean, we've had like white and black ones.
Well, but I mean, colors, you know, reds.
Yeah,
and
I don't think we've ever had like a pink or a blue. No,
yeah,
fun colors, because I think there was minis that had rose gold or something.
Mm.
It might have had rose gold, but I can't remember anything. No, I can't think. I know I've had a white iPad at one point in my life, but I generally go for the ones with the black bezels, right?
And there isn't a space gray one this time. It's kind of strange.
Well, this is the Pro model, right? This is the student model.
Like
you can work on your big school project, they said, right?
Yeah.
You know?
$150 difference from $449 to $599.
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Yeah. With the exchange rates and stuff. Yeah, for sure. Yep. Interesting looking iPad.
Yeah.
I mean, so here's the charging thing that I want to talk about. The one thing this has now is it has USB-C. And I don't know if in the consumer level iPads, if this is the first USB-C iPad, but if you think about it, it supports the Apple Pencil 1, right, which charges with, you said it, Lightning port.
Mm.
So you have to have some sort of adapter between USB-C and Lightning port to charge the Apple Pencil on this guy. That's weird. Do we even know of a Lightning? Because it's a USB on the back of the Pencil. When you take the tip off, it's like a mail, you know, I'm going to call it a mail plug, right? Because it's the one that goes into the Lightning port, right? Oh no, sorry. It used to come with an adapter that had a converter from male to, like, it had two females on the end, and you just popped it in. No, I apologize. We have no better way of describing the connection. The innie and the outie, right?
Wait, it can't have a male.
No. I just remembered now. I have an Apple Pencil 1 here. It came with a little about an inch long tube.
Yeah.
That had the ini version of the Lightning port, and you put that on the end of the Pencil, and then you could plug a conventional lightning cable into it.
Okay. Yeah.
Right. So now we're going to have a lightning to USB cable to plug it into your iPad to charge, right? Mm.
Well, what was on the other end, the back end of this little tube?
It's two lightning ports. Like, it's like a hard disk. Well, it's basically it's two female ports on the end of this little plastic tube. It's a tube with wiring in it, obviously, right? So the male part of the insertion part of the, is there a better way to say male or female?
Just say male and female. Just do
all right. Apologize to all the people out there, the PC people out there. But anyway, so you took the tip off the Apple Pencil 1, and you exposed the Lightning port, which is the male, right?
Oh, really? There's a male connector coming off of the pencil. That's weird because that can't plug into anything directly.
No, but you can because you used to be able to plug. You used to be able to plug your. You would take your.
You plug it into your iPhone.
You plugged it into your iPad to charge it.
Oh, I see.
So it kind of stuck out the end, people used to complain about the upside down mice when you plugged them in, but this was like I always felt weird charging my Apple Pencil this way, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But this little adapter let you use a conventional, you know, USB-A to a lightning cable to charge it with the adapter, right?
Got it.
Anyway, so now you're going to have a USB-C cable to lightning, right?
Yeah, that's USB-C
to lightning. Yeah, and then, do you know what I mean? Like, it's going to be a kind of weird convention there, you know?
Does the new iPad work with the Apple Pencil 2?
No.
Okay.
And the new Magic Keyboard Folio only works with this model of iPad.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right. Whereas the Magic Keyboard works with the sixth generation, fifth generation, and fourth generation.
Mm.
Right.
Fragmentation.
Yeah, there's some curious choices on that. I don't fully understand why we aren't moving everything to Apple Pencil 2 or second gen. I forget what it's actually.
Yeah, well, to charge it, right? Magnetically charge it, right?
Yeah, it would seem to make things easier, especially because you've got the Magic Keyboard Folio, and I don't remember how that connects, but if it's that same Smart Connector, it seems like that would be able to help as well.
Yeah, Smart Connector, that's what I was trying to remember. It's got the circles on the back, right?
I'll tell them this is still follow-up from the pandemic, because they would have been designing all these replacement things a year or 2 years ago during the height of the pandemic. Sure. Yeah, so we might be just having some leftover stuff that they put together to just get things out the door.
They've got some interesting.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Voices in the spoilers, iPad Pro 6th Gen, that don't make a whole lot of sense when you put them together with this iPad 10th Gen. A little bit.
Yeah, but it's a pro model, Jaime.
No, but it's like a little head scratchy of like, well, why wouldn't you do that here too? What's going on? And I think the we've got these leftovers. Let's make a platypus kind of thing is what they've kind of got.
Yeah, you're right. It's an odd duck from the point of view of like the pencil it supports and you know charging and this new keyboard and what does the future look like, right? And how many of these are going to end up in somebody's sock drawer, you know? Desk drawer kind of thing. It's like, remember the iPad 3? Do you remember that one? It was the first Retina.
I do. I had iPad. One.
Yeah. I mean, like who, like, you know, it was thicker than the other one. So you had to buy a different case.
Yeah. And they came out with the iPad 4, like 2 months later. Really, really annoying.
Right on the heels of it. Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep.
And I can't remember. Did the iPhone 4 have a 32 pin connector?
iPhone 4.
Because the iPad 3 had a 32 pin connector.
I don't remember.
4S did have the 30 pin because I think when I switched to an iPhone 5 to get LTE, I think I got an adapter for my 30 pin connector so we could use Lightning. So I think that's when that transition happened.
Right. Yeah, I think I had one of those too, actually, sitting in a drawer somewhere. Yeah. So the other thing they announced, which we can kind of talk about, I actually happily wrote down all the specifications and we can go through them, but there's a letdown at the end. So should I go through them? What do you think?
For which one? The iPad Pro?
The iPad Pro, sixth generation iPad Pro. We're at the sixth generation already. Can you believe it?
Mm.
So iPad Pro coming out with this new model has the M2 chip, right? as opposed to the last year's model had the M1. According to the stats that they didn't mention out loud, but they only showed in the video, 15% faster CPU, 35% faster GPU. These are up to 35%. 50% more memory bandwidth. We'll come back to that one, Mark, later. And 40% neural engine performance. This one comes in as up to 2 terabytes of storage. Comes with either 8 gigabytes or 16 gigabytes of usable RAM. Depends on the configuration you buy. And if you buy the 128 model, the 256 model, and the 512 gigabyte model, only use 8 gigs of RAM. But if you want to use 16 gigs of RAM, you need a 1 terabyte version or a 2 terabyte storage version. Same sizes, 12.9 inch and 11 inch. So it works with all of your, like if you had a Magic Keyboard from a couple of generations ago, you'll still be able to use this one. You'll still be able to use your Apple Pencil 2 with it. All the specs for what these things have, except for one spec that's kind of different here, I think, right, is the resolution of the 12.9 is still 2732 by 2048, T3 wide color gamut, true tone for viewing, ProMotion, refresh rate, anti-reflecting coating, 16,000 nits of brightness in HDR mode, and up to 1 million to 1 contrast ratio with the HDR. But they're also saying it's mini LED. If this is the first time we've seen mini LED in an iOS device, you guys recall? We've been talking about it for a while, but
yeah,
I don't remember. Gen 12 didn't have any mini LED.
I don't think any of them had it before. I feel like we've been talking about it. It's coming. It's coming to a device, but I could be wrong, but I don't think off the top of my head that I remember any devices that have had it.
Well, maybe I'll go to the Internet Archive in a few minutes and check it out. But and then the 11 is slightly lower. It doesn't come with HDR display. So same sort of features, P3 color, True Tone, ProMotion, anti-reflective coating, and up to 600 nits of maximum brightness. The camera on this one will also capture ProRes video. Comes with a 5 gig model, and this is new, the Wi-Fi 6E. Even more, it's an E year for this spec, Mark. One cool thing that it has is this new feature called Apple Pencil Hover, where the sensors in the display will detect the electromagnetic signal coming from the pencil. So when you're within 12 millimeters away, or I think 12 millimeters is about a quarter of an inch, I think, for you American folks, as you move closer to the cursor, whatever it is, quarter of an inch.
That's 1.2 centimeters, right? That's like a half an inch, more than half.
No, is it 1.2?
Yeah.
Oh, half an inch. Yes. Yeah. You're right. Right.
Yeah. Half an inch.
Yeah. Cause I always think of 2 centimeters roughly as an inch, but, as soon as you move the pencil close to the screen, the cursor starts to appear. So you can adjust the size of it. So that's as an artist or somebody drawing on it or using it for effects and whatever, you can interact with the pencil before it actually touches the front of the iPad, which is kind of cool. Plus you also have the pressure sensitive nature as well. This iPad also comes with iPad OS 16, which we talked about before, but now of course this is the new feature we've all been talking about and waiting for, Stage Manager. This version of the iPad, the 12.9 inch, also has USB-C Thunderbolt 4. And that will let you plug in extra monitors and actually that's where they say the Stage Manager pays off, is when you plug in an external monitor. Mm. So it will drive that. You can also plug in hard drives and storage devices. And some of the new apps that he talked about coming, which I just checked the App Store, they're not there. There's a new DaVinci, Resolve is an app for, I believe editing photos, Octane X for doing video editing, and Affinity Publisher, which is a Quark Express InDesign kind of program for doing desktop publishing, which I thought was available on iPad, but I just realized it's not out yet. So I have it on my Mac, but I don't have it on my iPads. So that's kind of an interesting thing. The Affinity software competes with Adobe software in terms of feature sets, right? But you don't pay by month; you pay one time for them. Pricing on these is $799 starting point for the 11-inch liquid retina display, and then $1,099 for the 12.9-inch liquid retina XDR display. So what's interesting about this is when I looked at all these stats, and I've got another link here comparing the iPad Pro 4th generation, 5th generation, and 6th generation. When I looked at this page, I realized that there's only a handful of things that are new. Most of what I just talked about is not new stuff. This is the same as what was in the 5th generation iPad Pro, except for the M2 chip, from what I can figure, and the camera shooting ProRes, this new Apple Pencil Hover, and Stage Manager. Well, but that's a
feature software that work on both. Yeah. Does it have the camera anyway, right? On the long edge as well? Did you notice?
You know what?
I don't know.
Didn't, but
yeah.
I think that was one of the things that they didn't do. So that was one of those head scratchers where I think the pros didn't move. And I'm not sure if it's true of both pros, but I think they didn't move the camera to the side, which maybe speaks to who they expect to be using these, but it still seems like a pretty...
But we're still on Zoom calls.
Yeah, it still seems like a pretty sensible thing. Like, are you expecting the pros to have some other thing that they're going to be streaming from for their video calls?
But, well, by the same token, though, that's the surface, that's the area where the charger for the Pencil is, right? So maybe there's a limit to where they could put it because of the mechanism for the charger, right?
Mm, could be.
Yeah. So, and of course, Face ID.
So it may just be that they really only refreshed the model of the regular iPod. The Pro is the same thing, but they just added in a couple little incremental iterative bumps just to modernize it a little bit. So you may not even think of the Pro as a new model. It's just the same Pro.
It's a bump. Yeah.
With the bump. Yeah. The interesting one is the Hover stuff, because you would think that would require some new hardware, unless the hardware was always there and it just wasn't working well enough. So they turned it off or feature flagged it in previous versions. Possible.
Could they turn it on online then?
Well, I think it's on in terms of signals coming out of the Pencil, but the receiving end is new in this iPad is how I interpret it.
Right.
So no new Apple Pencil 3 is sort of the short of that.
The tip off? I'm just going to try and see if I can find a... So where are you guys in terms of your iPad Pro, iPad purchasing currently? Like, Mark, you have an iPad Pro, but you have like previous generation, right?
Yeah. I have a 11 inch that's a little bit old. I have a 13 inch that's actually maybe a year and a half old now. So I'm not in the market for a new iPad right now. I just don't have the need for it right now. What I've got works fine.
How about you, Jaime?
Mine is, I believe, a 2017 era 10.5 inch iPad Pro. And it feels like it's giving up the ghost. So coming into this, I was pretty much intending to just let them have my money. I don't know that they'll have it on day one. I might just sort of wait till people start getting these and see if there's any, it accidentally caused this problem that was terrible and nobody knew. But I'll probably get one before the end of the year is what I think.
In what way is your current one going bad? Is it the screen or is it the touch sensitivity? Or
it actually seems to be the Wi-Fi connectivity. It is by far the flakiest device out of all my devices that I have, which kind of makes me think that it's not my Wi-Fi router, or if it is, it's mildly incompatible with my iPad, because my phone stays connected to Wi-Fi, my work and personal laptops stay connected, every smart device that we have stays connected, TVs stay connected. Literally the only thing that seems to just randomly stop working and I have to turn off the Wi-Fi and turn it on again on the iPad is the iPad itself. It's really weird. So I was like, if it wasn't for that, I'd probably still be, saying, I don't really need a new one. I mostly use a consumption device. I'll probably end up getting a Pro. Probably the 11 inch is the 12.9 is a little too big for the way that I use it. I am disappointed that it's not mini LED, but whatever. I'm not watching a ton of content on the device itself. It's mostly a browsing kind of device for me. Kick back on the couch.
So you're a 12 inch or 11 inch?
I would go to the 11 because that seems to be the closest to the 10. I have a 10.5 right now.
Oh yeah, the odd one. Yeah.
So the 12.9 is a little too big for, like, I don't need that amount of space, and it's actually not conducive to my kick back on the couch attitude towards the iPad.
Yeah, we have the same one. Carol uses the same 10.9 one that you have. Interesting. We don't have the Wi-Fi problems that you're having though, which is odd. By the way, the mini LED is new on this device. That's the other new thing. Confirmed by the Verge article that listed on Wikipedia. But yeah, so just a handful of new things like M2, like going from M2 to M1. I mean, I was looking at some comments on one of the Slack channels I'm on today, and they were saying that, you know, the M1 is way too much power for an iPad as it is, right? So unless you're doing like heavy lifting app with audio or video editing and that kind of stuff, right? I can hear my friends screaming right now, we don't have Logic Pro, we don't have Final Cut Pro on the iPad yet. So the other tools coming in to do tools like, or services like that, like the video editing app I mentioned earlier, or what's it called? Octane X, that would be something that people would look at for using an iPad.
I'm still amazed we don't have a dual boot iPad with iPadOS and macOS.
Or multi-user support, right? Like, it's funny, in the, you know, the classroom kit that they came out with like 3-4 years ago, 2019, right? Or earlier, I think. That has, you know, if you go into a classroom setting and you have like a cart of iPads, you know, the kids pick up the iPad, they log in with the Apple ID that they're assigned by the school, and their iPad responds, with all their stuff, because it's all stored on a, you know, centralized, you know, in the classroom server kind of thing, right? But each kid can log in individually into a single iPad, right? And get a different experience. I don't know why we don't have multi-user support to this day, right?
Yeah.
That's an odd omission. But we have Stage Manager.
Just buy more iPads, Tim. Like, that seems like the Apple solution to the problem.
Buy more iPads?
You got more users, buy more iPads. Feels like a win for them on that. The only multi-user they seem to have is through the classroom stuff, right?
Yeah. But it's an interesting thing. I thought about it for a minute, and then stumbled across that page, which is published by Apple, actually, the comparison page, right? With the fourth and fifth generation are not available for sale anymore, unless you go to like Amazon or Best Buy or whatever and pick up old stock. I'm doing old stock because it was not old until yesterday. There's no real difference in significant difference, unless the hover thing. Mini LED, those are pretty much the only, you know, sort of standout things in my mind. And the M2 chip, obviously. But the M2 to M1, is it that big of a deal, really? You know, what do you guys think? Like,
I think most people won't notice the difference.
Yeah.
Unless you're doing high power, like video editing.
And we're getting back to that same conflated, which iPad do I buy question that you're going to get from all your friends and family when they go to the Apple store, because let's look at it now. We have 1, 2, 3, 4... There's at least five available versions of iPad now, because there's two iPad Pros. There's an iPad Air still. They're what they're calling iPad. And there looks like there's two models of iPad, because I think there was the low end iPad as well. Right. And then they have the iPad mini, the sixth generation. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. So we have still the ninth generation iPad and the new 10th generation. The only difference is in color, and it's got the same squared edges like the Pros have had for the last few years. Right. This is American dollars. The iPad, most affordable iPad, they're calling it, is at $329. That's a 10.2 inch, right? I didn't mention that the iPad has A14 Bionic, not M1, right? It begs the question, what makes something a pro, right? I guess the amount of storage, the amount of RAM, and the fact that it's the M2 chip, right? Although all of these are Apple Silicon, right? Even the A1s and going forward, right?
Yeah, it's only Macs that recently changed to Apple Silicon, right? Everything else always had Apple Silicon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Even if it wasn't, I guess it was always designed. No, I get the early chips, I guess, were not designed by Apple until they bought PA Semi.
Mm, right.
Although I forget when that happened. Maybe the first iPhone chip did. I don't remember. I don't know. But they've always been the ARM chips. They were never Intel chips.
Right.
So what makes iPadOS quite different than iOS? I guess the Stage Manager is one thing, right?
Yeah, all the multitasking stuff that just doesn't exist at all on the iPhone, and the pencil support doesn't exist on the iPhone and the Mac. Yeah, yeah.
It's a tough question, Tim, because as technology has sort of, from a device standpoint, rapidly outpaced, you know, what would have been the, oh my gosh, remember the era of like, this year's Intel chip is twice as fast as last year's. Like, you're just not seeing that sort of gain, and you're not seeing the productivity gains come out of the tech on device itself. A lot more stuff is out in the cloud. So connectivity is a lot more important. So what makes a true pro device? Kind of in the eye of the beholder, right? Some of these choices feel a little arbitrary. Like, you probably could just have this incredible iPad that's just as good for students as it is for professionals trying to do high end stuff. But if you want to have market segmentation, you have to, and price differentiation or discrimination is the other word people use. You got to make some differences here. Not necessarily fault them for that, but it isn't a, this device is physically larger to handle a diesel powered gas engine, right? A diesel engine kind of thing to get you processing the latest Photoshop stuff, the latest 3D models. It's good that we've got all of this, this computation just, at our fingertips and we need it.
Yeah. I think the thing that's most obvious is Face ID versus Touch ID, between the Pro and the regular. So I'm looking at the iPad 10th generation versus the iPad 11 4th generation, the latest of the iPad and the iPad Pro. And the differences are, okay, a slightly larger screen on the Pro, M2 versus the Bionic. They both have 12 megapixel wide, but the Pro also has the 10 megapixel ultra wide camera.
Yeah, on the front as well, yeah.
Yeah. The Pro has the USB-C with Thunderbolt. The regular does not. Face ID versus Touch ID, storage up to 2 terabytes versus up to 256 gigs, Apple Pencil second generation versus Apple Pencil first generation, and the Smart Keyboard Folio for the Pro.
Right.
That's it. Yeah. There's not a...
Well, and then for the iPad OS, I was looking at comparisons. There's a new... I think they talk about this at WWDC. There's a new app called Freeform coming up, which is not limited to what you see on the screen. You can actually... It's like having a big giant piece of paper and you can... all around, you can collaborate on it, and there's a whole lot of desktop class apps they're calling coming out, right? Let's see what they've got listed here. Doesn't really say.
Yeah, but are those not available on the non-Pro?
No, I mean, I was asking what the difference was iPad OS and iOS was, right?
iPad OS and iOS. Oh, we're having two parallel conversations
there. Yeah, I know we're having two parallel conversations. I'm bringing
it back. iPad OS versus iOS is, it's the, as I was saying, the multitasking and the pencil, it's kind of it. I mean, just, different visual components for some things.
Yeah. Well, different screen real estate, I guess.
Yeah. Like, action sheets versus popover kind of stuff.
Yeah. So we're not buyers here, right?
None of us. I'm probably going to buy an 11 inch Pro, but that's because I'm rocking a 2017 model that seems to be, on its way to live at a farm upstate, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, too bad Poyo couldn't use an iPad, right?
The Pro also has 4-speaker audio versus 2-speaker for the regular.
Right, yeah. Well, that makes a difference right there. Or would you buy like the 5th generation, or would you go to this generation, Jaime?
Oh, I'd probably buy the current and this current new generation and just hang on. So it's 2017, 5 years. So see you in 2027 and see if I'm looking to buy a new iPad at that point. Is probably what I would expect. Like a lot of
also
people.
Also, LiDAR on the Pro and not on the regular.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
So if you're
anybody remember LiDAR? Yeah.
Yeah.
Wasn't that the song by Led Zeppelin? Does anybody remember LiDAR?
I don't think it was that song.
Yeah. Anyway. Well, let's move on to our picks. So I have an interesting pick here. I don't know if you guys, this is a Mac OS thing, but again, it's more than just code, folks, right? But if you've been playing around on Mac OS, which I think most of us have, you probably run into the defaults commands that are there for setting up different configurations and stuff like that. This is a page put together by, I forget who put it together, but it is just about every defaults command you could ever want to know about to make changes to your Mac that are beyond, the standard settings, right? It's deployed by Netlify. So thanks to the folks at Netlify. But, you got things like you can change the position of your docks, you can turn on auto hiding, some things you can do through your settings. But like, for instance, like screenshots, you can disable the shadows, you can include the date, you can display a thumbnail. Safari, you can have it show full URLs when you're typing things out. Lots of things you can do in the Finder. I can't think of any, you know, showing things on desktop automatically all the time kind of thing. So yeah, lots of things like feedback assistant, auto gather information. Time Machine don't offer new disks for Time Machine backup. Oh, that's an interesting one. You know, when you plug in a USB drive to your Mac, it asks if you want to use it for that, for Time Machine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so lots of different settings that you can use here. So this sort of gives you the TLDR on the default commands you might want to use in your life. So have a look at it.
Show build durations in Xcode. That was the one that I used Catalina, apparently. But that was one that is pretty nice. Especially,
yeah, I thought that kept turning itself off though. Maybe it was different versions of upgrades or whatever. You got it set up so it auto always shows the build times.
If it goes away, you can just bookmark this page, Tim, and come back to it. It's like, please don't do that.
Good thing I listened to this
Put
podcast.
Put my build durations back, say, please. Right? Yeah,
exactly. You know what's weird is, like, keeps happening to me, and maybe this is a defaults command for this, but I like to have, you know, in my sidebar in the Finder, I like to have my documents directory, my downloads directory, and my desktop, right? I know I can do, from the Finder, I can do Command-Shift-D, so don't at me, because Command-Shift-D if you want to get to the desktop, Command-Shift-A if you want to get to applications, Command-Shift-U if you want to get to utilities, and I think Command-Shift-H will take you to your home directory, but I like to have it in the sidebar so I can drag things over to, you know,
yeah,
to that folder.
I do that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But for some reason, my Macs keep, like, I don't know if it's my M1 Mac or not. I should check it. But I come back to it a couple of days later or after a reboot, and the desktop's gone. All the other folders that are downloads and my development folder, you know, the Spotcast folder and my, you know, More Than Just Code folder are all there in the sidebar. My Dropbox folder, my iCloud folder, obviously, right? But this one desktop folder, for some reason, keeps disappearing from my sidebar. I just don't understand. It makes me crazy. But like I said, Command-Shift-D, and I get back to my desktop. Just annoying. Mm. It doesn't happen to you guys.
Nope.
You haven't seen that.
Mind you,
it could be Ventura. It could be a bug in Ventura.
Mm.
Now that I think about it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. That's the one thing. I'm running Ventura on that Mac. Do we have any idea when... So now that iPad OS 16 is coming out, when is Ventura coming out?
I don't know if it's been stated yet, but usually pretty close to the iPad for iPad OS.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I kind of expected it in October, just like iPad OS. Oh,
yeah.
Could happen anytime. We could be doing another podcast tomorrow.
Yeah, who knows? Stay tuned, folks. Stay tuned. Stay by your sit by your podcast machine, and we'll be right back. Anyway, that's my picks, and Jaime's got a couple of picks here, so let's dig into those.
First one here is an article by Nick Babich talking about Apple's Aqua, that macOS 10 user interface, because that was the proper name back then.
Mm-hmm.
This is an audio-only medium, so you'll have to, you know, pull off from the side of the road and click the link in the show notes for those of you driving at home. I really found it kind of interesting to see what this looked like. Like, I recognized it quite a bit. I recognize this era. And you know, it's got some charm to it, and I feel like it still looks pretty good. Like, you can tell it's a bit dated if you lived through the era, but I bet if you found people who had never seen it before and showed them blind sort of taste tests, so to speak, they'd be like, oh.
Especially those Internet Explorer and Sherlock icons there in the dock, very prominently.
Yeah.
QuickTime player.
Yeah, this was a skeuomorphic design era thing, right?
Like, right.
We got rid of all the skeuomorphic stuff and went flat, right? But I used to really like this stuff. I used to do all this stuff in Photoshop, and I remember designing a brochure before this came out. Or I think I want to say System 8 also had a really interesting looking look to it. Like, there was, I don't know if you remember Copeland, Mark, and what was the other one? BOS.
BOS, yeah, that was supposed to be the OS 10 before they bought Nexstep.
Right, yeah, I think Copeland was, right? And because it had a sort of interesting look and feel to it compared to the old, you know, your previous versions of Finder and stuff. But did you ever work on this style of OS, Jaime? Or is this before your time?
I'm trying to think if I'm remembering the correct time. I think this was something, so I would have been at home a personal Windows user during this time, so I hadn't switched over to the Mac, but I want to say, like, school computers or something.
This is,
you know, computer labs is what's coming to mind for seeing the iMacs and seeing this, you know, the lickable Aqua interface. You know,
Yeah, this would be I think 2000. So you said iPhone 4 was in your first joined, right?
4S, which would have been in 2011. 4S.
Yeah. I think that was probably around Tiger or maybe even
Something like that. Yeah.
So this is in 2000. It would have been college, not high school.
Sorry, just another observation. The Internet Connect icon that they're showing has a phone handset as part of the icon, and not a cell phone, a wired phone. There's an actual wire coming out of it.
And the QuickTime player. Those were the days. QuickTime.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But didn't Sherlock got Sherlock, right? Or was it Sherlock?
Sherlock became Spotlight, I think, didn't it? Sherlock was the Sherlocking.
Oh, you can see if you scroll down in this article here, Jaime, there's an Mac OS 8. It was actually called System 8, I think. No, it was called Mac OS. It was the first Mac OS, right? 8? 8.0?
It was there was System 7 for sure.
Yeah, System 7. That was around for a long time.
Yeah.
I started on System 6, and then I think System 7 was around for like a good long time.
Mm-hmm. I don't have the slightest clue which Mac OS system version it would have been, but I've definitely used something that looks kind of like this, you know, the HyperCard era, and Computer Labs. It was pretty big in the educational space to have Macs. Mm-hmm. That's where I would have seen some of this stuff. But it is appealing both in a retro way, and you know, I feel like there's a little bit of coming back to the center, slightly away from the completely flat paradigm that iOS 7 started. It's not fully skeuomorphic, but you know, people are moving back towards like, hey, you know what? I can look at these old screens and know exactly where stuff is clickable. There is no question in my mind where I can, you know, scroll up and down on this page. How do I move this panel around? There's not a lot of clicking and guessing. There's some weird flourishes that made sense at the time, but aren't truly necessary in the modern era, like the genie effect, which I love. It's great. It does its job in a very flashy sort of way.
Did you know if you held the shift key down when you did the genie effect, it would do it in slow motion?
I did not know that. There you go. Pro tip.
See? We should also warn people, just as a PSA, if you scroll through this document, there is a screenshot from Windows 98. I just want to warn you. Well, I almost threw it in my mouth when I saw it. But
yeah, I don't want to trigger anyone.
Good old Windows Explorer that used to open up new windows for like every folder that you were looking at, which isn't entirely unreasonable. But if you had something that was way deeply nested, you were closing a lot of windows to get that out of your way.
Cool. Thanks for the trip down memory lane there, Jaime. What else you got for us?
Well, speaking of memory lane, it's a pick so nice. We've picked it at least twice, possibly thrice. We'll have to fact check that one at some future date. But we were talking before the show about iOS architectures and, you know, good old MVC and, you know, MVVM and MVI and Viper and clean architecture. And it brought to mind iOS architecture.top. It's .top for the domain name. And it's an iOS architecture generator from Guillaume Rambo. We were having fun generating some. I generated Spire, S-P-I-R, Store, Presenter, Interactor, Router, which absolutely feels pretty close to real. I feel like I could just make up a conference talk today about how that would be useful as a design, as an architecture. But it's a fun one to just generate and beverage time arguments and debates with people about, you know, is that better than MHERV, Model Helper Entity Router View Model? What do you like that one?
I like View Model Model Helper myself, actually, or Singleton Controller Presenter.
View Model Functional Store Interactor View.
I have now, interactional functional helpers.
We should warn everyone, it's not actually generating the architectures, just the names.
Yeah, here's model entity controller. How about that one? Yeah.
Ooh.
There was
entity singleton presenter and model. So you have both entities and models. That's useful.
There was a Palm Pilot app called the BS generator. And it basically was like, you know, when you get these marketing terms and you string them all together. It basically would do the same thing. It would, you know, you'd click on it and it would give you like a phrase you could say in a meeting and people would think you're using, you know, like a $10 word kind of thing, right? Same sort of idea. BS-O-Matic, it was called. BS-O-Matic. I think if you Google that, you'll probably find something very similar. You ever seen the BS-O-Matic?
I don't know if I have.
I just got Presenter Entity Interactor View, which is basically Viper if you only have one screen. Right? P-E-I-V. There's no router.
Monetizing next generation channels in contrast to orchestrating real-time action items in connection with automating virtual mindshare seamlessly generating 24/365 systems. And the buttons were fresh BS to get a fresh new one or pilot on to keep adding on. But that's very similar to this tool.
I mean, that one sounds so realistic that I have to start wondering whether the machine learning model has actually started spitting out things that it saw before that are a little too close to things that people have actually said.
Yeah, that actually sounds sort of like a conference talk title.
Yeah.
Definitely. I guess that's it for another week. So, hey, how many people want to get in touch with you? Where would they find you?
I'm on Twitter as @devofthehair.
And Mark, if people want to get in touch with you by, carrier pigeon or
carrier telephone pigeon line. MarkR@smapsoft.com.
My name is Timitra, TimMitra. On the Twitter machine is where you'll find me. And so until next time, we'll say bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
This has been another episode of the More Than Just Code podcast. If you want to find out more about the show, you can visit the More Than Just Code website at mtjc.fireside.fm. There you can find a summary and show notes of each episode. We list links to the apps, code, and news that we mentioned on the show. If you like the podcast, tell your friends, leave a comment on the website, or write a review on iTunes. And please recommend us in your favorite podcatcher. All of these things help others find out about the show. We really appreciate your help with spreading the word. We're also on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. We'd love to hear from you, so use the hashtag AskMTJC, and we may mention you on the show. Friends of the show can also join us on the podcast Slack channel. Once again, the podcast Twitter account is @MTJC_podcast. Please consider supporting the show by pledging any amount on patreon.com/MTJC. Every dollar pledged helps a lot. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
So are you guys going to stop using Twitter if Elon Musk buys it?
Probably not.
Maybe not immediately. I do think he will, you'll find some combination of the features will absolutely be better. I think Twitter has terrible, terrible product management and he can actually get them to deliver stuff. The network itself will probably get dramatically worse just given his personal choices.
Yeah. Now with more evil.
Yeah, exactly. But the features are way better. Like, oh man, right. Did 10 years of features in 1 year.
So is he going to buy it? Like his hand has been forced or what's the story?
It's getting close.
Pretty much. Yeah.
Getting close.
Really?
Legally bound to do so almost.
Yeah. But now he's saying he wants to buy it again.
Yeah. I heard that. So
he'll drop the lawsuit and he'll buy it.
Wow. You think he'll shut it down?
No, I think it's too much of an open megaphone for him to tweet from the toilet, whatever thought he has in mind.
Yeah. Well, wasn't he going to buy it because he felt that it was like cutting up free speech or something like that? Or
well, he didn't like the fact that they kicked off some high profile people. Mm-hmm. So he's going to let them, all get back on. It's going to be a free for all again.
Really?
Yep.
Hmm.
Yep.
Good to be king. Good to be king. I still find, I don't know, I pop into Facebook and LinkedIn and Twitter just to see what's going on, really, What do you use it for, honey?
It being Twitter?
Oh, social networks.
Oh, social. It's evolved a bit. I'm more involved in LinkedIn, of all things, kind of more semi-professionally. So dealing with the day job kind of lends itself pretty nicely to the kinds of things that I would like to talk about related to fintech. Twitter tends to be a lot more more casual. Facebook, even more so, and I would call it almost read-only mode from my standpoint, where I rarely post stuff on Facebook. Largely keeping up with what's going on with friends and family, who's gotten married, who's had kids, who's graduated, that sort of thing that it's useful for.
Yeah. Well, it's an old person's tool for sure. Like I use it to keep track of, you know, keep in touch with family and, you know, far flung relatives, you know, in different parts of the world and stuff like that. So
yeah. Yeah. And I keep up with TikTok in the form of reposted onto YouTube shorts. So that's that tells you where I'm at.
So let me ask you something. So what, YouTube shorts automatically get over to TikTok? Or you have to, you put them on YouTube first?
I think people have to do it themselves. They sort of cross promote there.
So my one big complaint about TikTok, maybe I've got it set up wrong, but I thought they had fixed this, but every time I open TikTok, it's always at full blast.
Oh, right? This is one of those things where Instagram's Reels do that too. I'm like, no, I would like this audio off. Please don't blast my ears. I listen to podcasts from my phone, and I sometimes have to have them kind of loud because I'm, you know, doing laundry or washing dishes or something. So to go over to Instagram and be like, hey, here's this crazy, I'm like, oh, okay, I just wanted to see the video. I didn't want to hear the video. And you know this because I explicitly set the audio to off. So you forgetting is either an explicit product management choice, in which case, shame on you, or this is why you can't be software engineers, bad programming choice, which again, shame on you. So I'm not sure which one it is, but there is definitely a quote unquote problem with social media apps forgetting quality of life things like audio choices.
Yeah, for sure. I find it like annoying, like you said, if I'm listening to a podcast or something and I just tap on the Facebook, you know, icon, and God forbid a video is like the first thing in the feed and it just shuts down the podcast, right? I find that annoying.
Yeah, this is one of those areas where Apple would do a whole lot to make the audio APIs a whole lot easier to understand, and if they could be more vicious on enforcing proper usage. So there are some apps that are really good, like Google Maps and Overcast are really good at elegantly ducking the audio when one is playing versus the other, right? Contextually, like, I'm listening to this podcast while I'm driving my car. Okay, cool. Oh, I guess I should turn right here. Thank you, audio, for, you know, ducking down, pausing, and then letting Google Maps take over, and then going back to the other app. But what really drives me nuts is if I open up a banking app and my podcast stops playing, or if I open up a home networking devices, Internet of Things kind of app, you know, smart devices thing. I'm like, oh, I don't even have an audio connected device for this app. Why did my podcast stop playing? Right. Yeah. This is a shame on you kind of thing. Like, this is bad programming. What are you doing?
Yeah. I have a similar annoying thing. The Bluetooth connection from my phone to my car, which normally if I just get in the car and, you know, and turn on the car, the music from my phone just starts playing through the car stereo, which is what I want to have happen. But if at some point in between driving my car, I open any one of various apps, like Shazam is one I happen to know does this, if I just open it, then next time in the car, it has no memory of my Bluetooth connection to the phone anymore. I have to reestablish it.
Really?
Yeah, it's really annoying. Huh. Really annoying.
Yeah, I wondered about that because Carol and I both, we, you know, obviously share the car from time to time, and we have both of our phones set up to do Bluetooth, and it, for some reason it won't remember mine, but it'll remember hers, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Good point. I hadn't really thought about that.
Hmm. Yeah. Also, anytime I update my OS on, or my iOS, it also loses the memory.
Oh, right.
Of it.
Yeah, that too. Yeah.
Stupid.
That's what kills me about, like, whenever when an app does an update, this is, you follow me on Twitter, you'll see this as a pet peeve. It comes up quite often. I don't understand how app developers can't figure out how to persist your credentials between their app updates.
Hmm.
You know, like the app updates and I go to open it up and it's like, log in again. I'm like, really?
Yeah. Why aren't you using Keychain?
Right. Exactly.
Developer or 1Password or something, use a Keychain to remember that stuff. Yeah. Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Just even remember the email address or the user account I used would be helpful, right?
Yeah. Very annoying.
I don't know.
Yeah, Tim, that exact anti-pattern has forced me in the kind of person I am. So I am a person who does not let his apps auto-update. I don't let the operating system auto-update. I go and update it myself, right? At a time that's convenient for me to do so. So because of this, when I go in and see which apps need to be updated, there are some apps that I update them and then I launch them to see, okay, did this app maintain my login? Because if it didn't, I might as well take this opportunity now while I'm distracted, just go ahead and log in again. And it's pretty easy with like one password. Because what I don't want is to be out in the field, so to speak, and then have this critical app fail at that time when I might be under stress, right? So there's a whole bunch of apps that I just really don't care. I'm like, whatever, if it logs me out, it's not a critical thing. But like this app right here, this one needs to work the first time every time. Let me go log into it, or let me go fire up the app to see, did their engineers do a good job today? And it's a really sad statement on my personality and as a reaction to how some of these apps just don't maintain your login correctly. It's so easy nowadays, way easier than the, hey, remember when Black Pixel wrote this wrapper that they open sourced that everybody was using because keychain was hard? It's like, well, it's a lot less hard now in 2022. Like, what are you doing? What's going on?
Well, and to add to that, Apple added their own wrapper to the Swift version of the keychain, right? So you don't have to, you just get it from Apple now, right?
Yeah.
I wrote an article on it back in 2014 was the first version, but I think I updated it in 2017, and it's still true. I wrote a tutorial on using Touch ID back in, on, I can't remember if it started with Objective-C, but, oh no, I had a keychain wrapper within Objective-C, because back then things weren't quite where they are today, but then eventually they got to a Swift version. So the latest article has how to do it in Swift with keychain, and then if you want to add, Touch ID and Face ID and biometric, got that in there as well.
Yeah, that's,
I'll put a link in the show notes.
That's my point, that nowadays it's a whole lot nicer coming from Apple itself. The old school API, I do admit, was sort of the combination of chainsaws and nunchucks, where it was like you really had to know what you were doing to make sure you weren't going to mess it up. And that's why everybody at the time used the Black Pixel wrapper, because it just made it a whole lot easier to get it right, because they had done the hard work. But nowadays, to your point, it's got a Swift version of doing that, which the types themselves should help you out a whole lot, instead of these was it like pointers or something? I think there was It wasn't like regular Objective-C stuff. It was like probably C, right?
Yeah, it was C, yeah. Yeah. It was ugly, yeah. Yeah, and it's not really hard. I mean, like, you can retrieve things from... I mean, it's not like you can leak information from the keychain, because it's pretty well protected, right? But you can retrieve information and reuse it, provided it's the same user using the phone and all that kind of stuff. So, and there are ways to manage security, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Not hard. Reduce friction for your users. That's what I'm on about, right? What else is going on? What's going on in the Valley? What's going on in Seattle these days? How's your COVID doing?
COVID's pretty low right now in the Valley, which is good.
Same here.
Funny where cases are going up here, but I mean, everybody's still, COVID's over, but, and walking around freely, and we don't have mask mandates on our national airlines anymore.
That's all done here too. I was just in Boston a couple of weeks ago, and there was pretty much no sign of people paying attention to COVID anywhere on the route through the airport, through the air, through the city and back, except a few people wearing masks here and there, but not many. Well, I mean, I sort of get it. I'm pretty vaccinated. I just had my latest booster with the Omicron booster. So I don't wear a mask anymore. But I keep an eye on how things are going, and if it starts climbing again, then I would start doing it again if the rates start going up.
But you've had bouts of COVID. Have you had the Omicron version yet?
I don't know if it was Omicron, but I did get it last June. Yes, first time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just had it in end of August there, so it was not fun, but not horrible.
End of August,
more like. Yeah, we brought it back. We got it back on the way back from Ireland.
Well, that was your second time though, right?
I tested positive back in the spring, but I didn't really notice anything particular. Like, I might have felt a little queasy for a day, but no, this was full coughing and sneezing and, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. not wanting to be vertical for a while. But I wasn't, you know, quite like flu sick, you know, like I was still able to work. And but yeah, I just wasn't, you know, I was on mute a lot because I was coughing all the time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know what to think about it. So for, you know, work conference I went to, I was one of a handful of people masking it pretty much the entire time, except for while eating. Right. But otherwise, culturally, it is, it's pretty much over, even if practically speaking, it's really not. We're settling into a yearly cycle for vaccination boosters, similar to the flu, which I also got my flu shot as well, in addition to the...
Yeah, I'm going to get mine on Friday.
The combined one. So I think that's kind of where it's at. The more pressing thing for here in the Seattle area is this Bolt Creek fire that's been going on for like a month or more. I don't even know how long it's been anymore. Just
a fire, like a forest
fire? Like wildfire. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And the one saving grace for me of the new watchOS and the new iPhone, iOS, is that you have widgets that you can put to see what the air quality index is like. So I've had those on so I could wake up and see, you know, what is it like? Is it a decent time to go out and take the dog, or should we just kind of, you know, wait it out for a little bit? It kind of smells like a campfire. It's not always like that. There's some days that are better than others where it's less hazy, but boy, am I waiting for, you know, we're hoping for rain this weekend to, you know, one, signal the actual sort of beginning of autumn, which it doesn't feel like we're in. We're still in the 70s, which is kind of mind-blowing. And to also start washing some of that particulate out of the air and hopefully start making it more difficult for that fire to sustain itself over in it's like central eastern kind of Washington area.
Yeah, our Friday forecast looks like it's going to be warm again for a bit. Like, yeah, you're right. We should be thinking about snow and stuff, but mind you, I usually find it doesn't start to really get snowy until November anyway, right? But, it, you know, first of November, it's usually raining.
I'm still wearing shorts during the day. It's usually by now, I've at least, you know, maybe still wearing a t-shirt, but at least switching to jeans, and then eventually, you know, start putting on a hoodie and then long sleeves, and it's just really delayed. It's weird.
Yeah, I'm definitely wearing jeans and socks and long sleeves these days. You know, hoodies. It's not that warm here. How are things in sunny California there, Mark?
Nice. You know, it's we had a couple of days of rain, but today it was warm again. Probably it's in the 70s.
It's not bad.
Yeah, we're short on water, so we needed the rain, but we're still short on water. It's a pretty bad drought right now. So if you want to send us some, you know, get some blocks of ice and put them in a package in the mail, mail them to California, you know, by the time it gets here, we'll get the water. Yep.
Yeah. Get right on that.
Okay.
All right. Thanks. Talk to you guys later. Bye.
See ya.
We're not.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time.
That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.